Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, murder is on the mind of two sets of show writers in the week ahead, which will make for some must-see viewing. So on General Hospital, we will see someone fall victim to the hook. And we have a very teasy cover this week with the possible victims, which includes Ava, Brando, Michael, Diane, and Nina. So one of those characters is not going to survive, and you're going to have to tune in to see it play out. Now, over at Days of Our Lives, the identity of Abigail's murderer will finally be revealed. That's also going to be a tune-in moment, and Kevin Spiridis will reprise the role as Craig as part of that story, and it's going to be an explosive set of episodes in Salem.
Justice for Leo is all I'm going to say. the timing, I'm sure, is coincidental, but for fans of both of those shows, it's very kind of Days to solve their whodunit just as GH is kicking off theirs in earnest. I will say that in addition to saying goodbye to a character on GH next week, the amateur detectives in the audience will also get some vital clues about who the killer seems to be targeting, and we'll learn more about how they're going about it as well. And then in far less deadly news, on YNR next week, we're going to meet a new player, an attorney named Audra Charles, who is played by Zuleika Silver. We have an interview with her in the new issue, and she says she kind of fell in love with her new YNR family during the audition process, because while this doesn't always happen when she tests for jobs, the actors she read with were fun and made her feel really comfortable and were willing to rehearse and just gave her a really good feeling about the group that she was going to be working with. Her character comes to Genoa City to meet with one of the town's high-powered business icons, and then her story will certainly blossom from there because it is a contract role.
Well, also on YNR, we're going to see Sean Kanan's Deacon cross over to his former home and cross paths with Melody Thomas Scott's Nikki, even though the scenes technically take place in Los Angeles, which is, you know, the home of B&B. Speaking of B&B, Ridge is going to walk in on a close moment between Brooke and Bill, and Steffi is going to intercept a call that Brooke makes to Ridge to keep him away from Brooke and closer to Taylor. Now, we've gotten so many emails to our sound off inbox from readers who just cannot understand why Steffi and Thomas are so obsessed with their parents reuniting, and frankly, I can't disagree. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think Torsten Kay and Krista Allen have excellent chemistry. I wouldn't be opposed to a Ridge and Taylor reunion, but I feel there are better ways to bring them together than through their adult children who are acting completely immature. I mean, I'd be on board for a Brooke and Bill redo, or even a Brooke, Bill, Jack triangle. I mean, where is Ted King? Or we could do a Bill, Lee, Jack triangle. I mean, there are just a host of opportunities here.
I agree with you. I actually wrote a second opinion in our thumbs up, thumbs down column at one point, decrying this same thing, this obsession that these grown children have with their divorced parents getting back together. I think it kind of like galls me because my parents are divorced and it's very obvious to me why they weren't meant to be together. And not for one second when I was a kid did I want them to get back together, much less carry that desire into adulthood. And it's not that I couldn't accept a soap character feeling that way about their parents. I just don't feel like it serves either of these particular characters that they are so hung up on this. And I think it's particularly true of Steffi, who I generally think of as a more emotionally healthy person than her brother is. I don't like Steffi, you know, talking trash about Brooke sleeping with multiple members of the same family when Hello, she has done the very same thing. You know, just as Brooke was intimate with Eric and Ridge and Thorne, Steffi slept her way through the Spencer men. So she doesn't have the moral high ground that she seems to think that she does. In any event, I wish that Steffi and Thomas were putting all the energy they're putting into trying to force a Ridge Taylor reunion into signing Taylor up for like some dating apps. And if Ted King were to re-enter the picture, why not pair Taylor with Jack?
Oh, I would totally be on board for Taylor and Jack as well. Again, lots of story potential here that doesn't have to be a retread of a triangle we've seen or compromise the characters in the process.
You're here.
Also in the new issue, we have two catching up features. One is with Murray Bartlett, who played Cyrus on Guiding Light and just took home a primetime Emmy on Monday night for his work in The White Lotus. And the other is McKenna Grace, who played Young and Restless's Faith, but has found great success outside of Genoa City. Now, speaking of catching up, our guest today is a Daytime alum who has appeared on two soaps, one on each coast. It's Farrah Fath, best known to Daytime fans as Daze's Mimi and One Life to Live Gigi. So let's check in with her and see how life is going. Hi, Farrah.
Hi, Steph.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so good. And I'm very excited to catch up with you. I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah. Not that long, but I feel like the last time I did any kind of soap opera interview, it's been many moons.
Everyone wants to hear what you're up to and how you're doing, but we are going to start at the beginning. So you are a Kentucky girl and got into showbiz at a very young age versus a model and later as an actress. So tell us how you got involved in modeling when you were only 5 years old.
Oh man. My mom says that we were just driving in the car and I guess I could read, I don't know, but she said that I pointed at the little local modeling agency and said that I want to go there. I want to do that. And this is her story. So I don't know how I knew what it was or anything, but I definitely liked the spotlight. I liked to be like on a stage or behind or like in front of a camera. And so I guess I kind of believe her because I definitely remember like wanting to do all those things. I don't know how I knew what modeling was, but so she took me there. I got some headshots. The cutest little headshots you've ever seen, like my height, my weight, I weighed like 40 pounds, you know? And, I did a lot of local modeling. And then I guess when I was eight, we went to LA and, we did this modeling and acting convention and I got a lot of, interest there, but it wasn't a good time. Like in my mother's life, I don't think she was fully prepared for like actual offers to come in. We lived in Kentucky and had my little sister and my family, and she was just not ready for that. And that's fine. And then, I went to school a few more years. And I guess when I was 14, I told her I wanted to get serious about acting, and she was in a better spot in life to like, let us go for it. And so we went for it.
Well, before you really focused in on acting, you also had a stint on the pageant circuit. And in 1995, you were named Miss Kentucky Preteen. Yeah. So what did you like and what did you not enjoy about the pageant experience?
I remember there was like the mail was sitting on the kitchen table, and like in the mail was a pamphlet for this pageant. And I saw the girls on the front of the pamphlet with their crowns and their gowns. And again, it was something that I lobbied to be a part of. So I asked my mom, can I do this? And I showed her the pamphlet and she said, okay. She had no idea what she was getting herself into. It costs a lot of money and you have to have all the right wardrobe. And there's a lot of coaching and training that's involved. And we didn't know any of that. I don't know. I got so lucky because my babysitter that summer, she was over one day and she saw the pamphlet and she said, why do you have this? And I said, well, I'm going to do that, Pat. I'm going to be in that pageant. And she goes, you see this girl right here? She was one of the winners from the year before. And she was on the pamphlet and she goes, I can help you. And I was like, well, great. If not for that serendipitous little situation, I would have come in dead last. Yeah, I mean, I had no idea. Like, her and her mom were like laughing at me when they would like have me show them what I like thought I was going to do on stage. And they were like, no. So they kind of whipped me into shape real fast and helped my mom get me a wardrobe for like in the cheapest way possible. I think they had a little seamstress in town who sewed together this dress for me. It cost like $200 at the absolute most. Meanwhile, other girls had on like $3,000 gowns, you know? And, but yeah, I took it down and, I didn't really have a lot of interest in pageants after that. That was like the biggest one at the time in that area. And there was like, I want to say there was around 100 girls and it was like big deal. And I kind of just felt like I conquered that. Now what else can I do? But, I had a little pageant moment, but it was short lived.
Well, were you excited that you won? I mean, it improbable.
Yeah, I bawled my eyes out when I won because I had really worked really hard in, you know, the 2 months leading up and practiced so hard. I wanted it so bad. I'm very competitive at heart. And I really wanted to win. And it was funny because like I went into it and even though like it was my first pageant and like all the other girls felt like all the other girls had been doing it since they were like learning to walk. I think I was 11 at the time. I knew I was going to win. I went in there and I was like, I know I'm going to win. And I felt like that about my Days of Our Lives audition too. I knew I was going to get the part. And I say it, and I've said it many times since then, I never had that feeling again in anything else.
So, all right, you were only 15 and had 1 year of high school under your belt when you did land the role of Mimi Lockhart on Days in 1999. So had you ever auditioned for a national television show prior to that?
No. It was another serendipitous situation. I watched Days since I was littler than 15. And my grandmother watched it. And the same babysitter that won the pageant, she watched it too. So between those two ladies, I was addicted to watching Days of Our Lives. The manager that I had met in the winter at the convention took me around to a few different agencies. And the first two agents they passed on me because I didn't have any experience. And then the third agent, his name's Kurt Pitino. He was with Bobby Ball Agency at the time. Kurt is like still a friend of mine. I mean, I don't know how many years it's been, 20 plus, over 20 years. He took a chance on me, saw something in me. And then a week after I signed with the Bobby Ball Agency, they sent me on the audition for Days. And it's so funny to me now because my mom, she had given us 3 weeks to make it in Hollywood. She had 3 weeks off from work and that's all she could afford to do for us. But I made it happen. Oh my God. I mean, looking back, it's so crazy. Our naiveness, or is that a word?
Naivete.
Really worked to our advantage, I guess, because we had nothing to lose. And I don't even know. I'm sure Kurt knows at this point that when I signed with him, it was supposed to be like a year contract and we were only going to be there for 2 more weeks.
Well, tell us about the whole audition process at Days and actually getting the role, like who to audition with, what were your hopes at that point? Well, clearly you knew you were going to get it.
I knew I was going to get it. I knew the role of Mimi already. I was fascinated with the character of Belle coming onto the scene. And then I remembered seeing her little friend and then the little friend being Mimi. And I was in Fran Bascom's office. May she rest in peace. And I remember just looking at all the pictures of the cast on the walls And like, I just asked her, I was just like rambling my little, I was just blabber mouthing to her about everything, like asking her so many questions about the show and the storylines and the characters. And this is another thing, like another thing I think about, like now, like looking back, like her face, like just looking at me like, oh my God, who are you? You know, I was just this little like Kentucky bumpkin. Like I just had gotten off the bus from Kentucky and I was like in a whole other world, but that really fit the kind of description for Mimi. You know, she was just this quirky sidekick friend that was supposed to be the comic relief. And I walked into that office just being that. And I didn't know it at the time that I was just nailing my audition by just like not shutting up. and then, yeah, so I knew I was going to get a callback. I was like, oh, that went really well. And I had the callback, and the callback was with Kirsten, reading with Kirsten in the offices, you know, at the studio. And I remember sitting upstairs on the couch, and I don't remember any other girls being there. They probably just didn't matter to me. Just really just was there to, you know, sign on the dotted line. But I remember Allison Sweeney being up in the offices, and that was just like, so awesome for me. And so I think I took a picture with her, or I asked her for her autograph. So she signed like my audition script or something. And then, but I also remember thinking, well, that's not the last time I'll see you, Sammy. Yeah. So then I went to the room and I read with Kirsten, and that was it. I mean, as we were leaving the lot, we got the call that I got the part.
Wow. Yeah. Were you starstruck at all by Kirsten? Did you feel at ease with her? You know, if you were a fan of the character?
Both, I guess. Like it was, you know, it was a little surreal for me. Definitely. But I was just really excited and really like overly confident.
Do you remember your first day and what it was like?
Yes. This is like being in a therapy session, by the way. Like these are not things that I remember until you ask me.
We're here to serve.
These are deeply rooted memories. Patrika Darbo, I believe, and Kirsten, it was a hospital scene, and I had like two or three lines. That was it. And I remember like I had to bring my own clothes in the first few episodes. Like I think they didn't know like how long I was gonna last or whatever. I remember being insecure like about my body because Kirsten was like so thin, and I was like kind of like a voluptuous teenager. I remember feeling that kind of insecurity, but like other than that, I was like really comfortable like behind like acting, and like I was just having so much fun. And I couldn't wait to have more lines. I remember like thinking, oh, I want to, you know, have like a whole page of dialogue. I just had like two lines the first day.
Careful what you wish for, Farah.
Oh my God. Yes. 1,000 episodes later, like my brain.
So if I'm not mistaken, the role was originally intended to be exactly what you signed on for, which was just Belle's sidekick. But once you were in the part, I think they offered you a contract a little while later and expanded the role. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think after like 6 months, my mom was wondering, should I quit? Cause I had, at this point I was in between like staying with a family friend that we knew out there. And then also a lady that my manager had, a friend of like his, she lived in Burbank. And so I was kind of like staying with this stranger, and my mom would come out when she could, but she had my sister and her job. And so after 6 months, she finally inquired, she was like, is this going to be like a thing? Like, do I need to quit my job and like move my other daughter out here? Like, do we need to get like our own? Cause she, you know, she didn't know how long it was going to last. And so my manager then went to the powers that be at Days, and apparently the reaction was, oh, we didn't know she wanted to sign a contract. Of course she can sign a contract. Like, okay. So then we signed a 3-year contract. All we had to do was just kind of like say, hey, can I have a contract?
And you got one.
Really bizarre. And I remember like in the first year or two, Steve Wyman was the EP at the time. And he brought me into the office, which was like usually a scary thing. But he said to me, he's like, do you know what everyone says in the
meeting? Focus groups?
Yeah. Focus groups. Do you know what everyone says in the focus groups? And I was like, no, I don't. Everyone wants more Mimi. And I was like, oh, okay. And he goes, so I just want you to know, we're going to give them what they want. And I was like, two thumbs up to this. And that's when I like, yeah, I was like, wow, I think I'm doing good. And, you know, and yeah, my role just kind of progressed from there.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to those people in the focus groups.
Thanks, focus groupers. So did your family move out here? And then what was that adjustment like then, now that you're all living in Los Angeles after Kentucky?
Yeah, we got an apartment in Burbank, and my sister started high school in Burbank, and they were here for like 2 or 3 years. And then when I turned 18, I wanted my independence. I was like, you know, I'm working, and I was grateful that my mom like had let me do what I was doing, but I wanted to like live on my own and stuff like that. And, they went back to Kentucky, and my sister started college in Kentucky.
So what about you? Did you have anything akin to a traditional high school experience once you were on the show?
No, the first few months I was on Days, I tried to do a real high school, the high school there in Burbank, John Burroughs. I think I was there for a couple of months, and then I just ended up missing too many days. And it just made sense for me to get on a homeschool program. So I got on a homeschool program. I mean, truth be told, I hated school. Like, that was one of the reasons I wanted to start acting. My freshman year of high school in Kentucky was just like torture. I was bullied. I just didn't like it. I only loved drama class. Like that 1 hour a day in drama class was like my escape. And I just wanted more and more of that. I was just addicted to it. So as soon as I could like get my GED, Kirsten and I, we both did that together. And, I'm not sure how old we were, maybe like 16 and a half, 17. And then once we got that, we could work adult hours, and we wanted to work adult hours. We loved working and hated having to do the mandatory 3 hours of schoolwork on set, and just made it a lot less fun. And, you know, we're making money. And if I wanted to do school later down the road, I was like, Mom, I'll do school down the road if I want to, like if I need to or want to. And I never, ever wanted to.
It all worked out. Yeah. Well, as Mimi, you were part of a storied group of younger characters that included Belle, Chloe, Sean, Philip, and Jan, and really like a whole new generation of Days that the audience looks back on that crew and their ups and downs with such fondness. So why do you think it gelled as well as it did?
Wow. You know, it all started, it was still in the 90s. So it's like still in like the heyday of soaps. And there really hadn't been like such a young group come on in a while. Right. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think they brought us on at like just the right time. And, I mean, I would attribute a lot of the success. We just were lucky. It's just one of those, like we all had good chemistry and our characters were, written well. And, yeah, I mean, it just worked, and it all worked. And, I'm proud to have been a part of that little era.
As well, you should be a critical component of it. What was it like to go to work and have so many people kind of in your age group?
It was fun. I mean, it still felt like school. I still had that, you know, a lot of the social stuff, except we were just pretending to be at school, like,
even better. It's not real.
Yeah. Our fake dances and all that. It was just so much fun. I never, once like had a, like a time period on days where like, I just wasn't having fun. All 7.5, 8 years, I just had a total blast. And, yeah, I mean, it was just like the coolest thing to have had happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, who were you close with off camera? And like, what are your fondest memories of those friendships?
You know, I'd like to think I was friends with like everybody. We, both Bells, Kirsten and Martha. I mean, Jason Cook, Eric Winter, Kyle Brandt, Jay Johnson, Nadia. I was friends with everyone. And if there was a recast, I was friends with the recast. I loved everybody. Yeah. And we were all like, still so young that like, we liked to go out and we'd like to like, you know, be social, like outside. Like if I were working on a soap these days, I would get to work, I would do my job and I would come home. There would be no after work drinks and like going out on the weekends. That would just not be a thing anymore. But we were all at that age where we had fun doing all of that stuff. So,
Well, you had a pretty awesome on-screen mother on the show in Judy Evans, who plays Bonnie. Tell us about working with her and your relationship with her.
She's just the sweetest person alive. She's so sweet. And she's so happy to be there. Like she's like so grateful to be there. And any day she gets to work there, she makes the most of it. And I love, like, even though she was like a veteran when she like came back on as Bonnie, she was nervous. And that was like refreshing for me to see that someone who like had an Emmy and had like been on the show already and like done other shows, she was nervous and like giddy again. And I was like, oh wow, that's cool. And I think I would, you know, be the same way now. But yeah, she just like treated me like a real daughter. So she's just like a dream to work with and couldn't have asked for a nicer person to, yeah. Can't say enough nice things about Judy Evans. Mm-hmm.
Well, early in 2007, you left Days after about an 8-year run. So tell us about making that decision.
It's a decision that I like immediately regretted after my last day. I was like walking to my car and I was like, what did I just do? That was like such a good gig. But I think it mostly had to do with like being a little burnt out on just LA and just like my lifestyle. I just wanted, I don't know, 8 years at that point at being, I was 23. That was like a big chunk of my life. And I just kind of wanted to see what else was out there. But then once I like made my bed, I was like, oh, now I'm scared. Cause that is all I wanted to experience other things, but then I don't know. So it all worked out. Thankfully, I was really scared for a few months, but I had the meeting with ABC and it went well, thankfully. So, and that I couldn't have asked, you know, for it to work out better because I got to like start that next chapter and leave my little Hollywood life behind and grow up in New York. And I got to kind of like start over and like, I think like being so young on Days, I don't want to say that I didn't appreciate things, but like I may have taken some of it for granted and, not treated my job like with as much respect as I should have. I just, you know, I would come in some days, like I didn't even look at my lines and I'm just like scrambling to like learn my stuff. And, when I moved to New York, I wanted to like be really good. And like be on time every day and really be prepared. And I just wanted to start over and start fresh and, in a new city and, grow up a little bit. So, that's what I did.
So you are referring, of course, to taking on the role of One Life to Live's Gigi Marafco. You said you had a meeting with ABC. Was it specifically for One Life or just the general ABC daytime was interested kind of thing?
It was just to see, quite frankly, when Brian Franz had told me at a party when I was like 19, if you ever want to make the jump, you just call me. And I didn't leave Days with like that as my plan. I wanted to, like, I had a pilot season. I tested for a sitcom in between leaving Days and taking the meeting with him. Or it came down to me and one other girl. It was like a big sitcom for Fox, and they went with the other girl. And so I wanted to see what I could do maybe like outside of the soap world. But then pilot season started dying down, and like I was just used to working so much that like 3 months of unemployment was like felt like forever to me. So I kind of I was starting to freak out a little bit. And so then I said to my manager, well, let's see if Brian remembers saying that to me. And he did. And he said, I don't think we have anything on General Hospital right now, but we're testing for Sarah Roberts on One Life. Why don't we have you go out there and test for that? And I was like, okay. So I screen tested with, I went with David Fumero. And then I went home, and then they said, we don't think she's right for Sarah. We want to create a role for her and have her work with John Paul Lavoisier.
Okay. Well, that must've been flattering that like you did enough that they want to create a job for you.
Yeah. And it was fun because, then they told me I would be starting in a few months' time. So I had a job lined up, and so I could stop stressing and then have a little fun. Like, you know, so I went home to Kentucky and just got to be with my family and friends and kind of just hang out for a few months. And then I geared up and I moved to New York.
So Gigi was introduced as a single mom and a waitress in Paris, Texas, where her coworker was Vicky Lord of Landview, though she didn't know it at the time. What was it like coming in and like working right off the bat with her legendary portrayer, Erica Slezak?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe that that's how they were bringing me on. I was like, that's a big deal. I'm like, they could have brought me on so many different ways where it like just didn't matter as much, but like, that was like really flattering. And it made me just like really realize that they're trying to like get people accustomed to me as quickly, like they're trying to get me in the mix, you know, and that was cool. So, and man, she was just like, just so easy to work with and so fun to work with. And like, and you know, I already had the mentality of like wanting to like be really professional and do a good job. But then like I saw her work ethic like right away, and I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. So I just need to like watch what she does. And like the whole vibe there was just, I'm glad I had that mentality already, because that was a New York set and an LA set. It was so different. Like the LA set was just so much more like, how do I say this without like making it be offensive? I mean, it was just like more like laid back, but also more diva-ish, you know, like everyone's checking their makeup more and they're this, I need some time and blah, blah, blah. And I was guilty of that. Like, and then there's no time for any of that on a New York set. It's take your places. Oh, you want to powder your nose? Like, get on with it. And then, And they just did things differently. And, I was ready to learn. So, Erica was just, she was fascinating to work with in the best way. Just like, she just had the best energy. And, I can see why, like, I mean, she was just like the queen of the studio. And, it was great.
Well, at the same time, you're navigating this new job, you're navigating a new city. So what was the transition like for you to now live in New York after Los Angeles and Kentucky?
It was exciting. It was just an adventure, learning the subway, like how do I get to work? I don't have a car. It was just like all new. And it was fun.
Who were your buddies in the One Life cast? Like, who did you socialize with?
It was sort of just like, it was different from Days. You know, like also I came in as the new girl, and Melissa Archer was really welcoming, and Beth Ann Bonner was very welcoming. I was just there to work. So it wasn't as much of like, let's go out and party. It was just like a different situation. Everyone was nice, but I wouldn't say I had like super, say Melissa Archer, like say, like really super close friends, like I had on days.
So as you mentioned, your main love interest on the show was John Paul Lavoisier's Rex, and the two of you became an item in real life as well. So what was it like to work so closely with your real life partner and then have that relationship in the public eye?
It just was natural. We had a great time. Our personalities, like we just laughed a lot, and it just happened all very naturally, and it became just kind of normal. I think what, it was maybe like a little bit weird when like he would have intimate scenes with other, and then like vice versa. I mean, 'cause I had never dated a co-star before. So, and then it was a great time though. Yeah. We had a lot of fun.
So, not like things weren't soapy for Gigi, like throughout your run, but I feel like it really got cranked up toward the end of the show when like their last few months of story, Gigi was seemingly killed, but It turned out that the true victim was her sister, Stacy, who had undergone plastic surgery to look identical to Gigi, and Gigi returned from the dead and got her happy ending. She married Rex and they moved to London with their son. So what stands out to you when you think about that whole stretch of time, which also coincided with the show going off the air?
It was just like soap opera in its like most pure form. I loved it. I mean, when they told me, Frank was like, "We're going to kill Gigi." And I was like, "Well, okay." And that's how I kind of left it. It was like a long pause. And he goes, "But we're going to bring you back as," and then he explained it. And I was like, "Well, okay."
Well, in light of that reaction, were you ever someone who was one of the people of like, "My character wouldn't do that"? Or did you ever kind of push back about a story on either soap?
I remember getting a little bit frustrated with the storyline where Stacy was blackmailing her about the stems, like withholding the stem cells for the cancer, for the son's cancer treatment, Shane's cancer treatment. Like that just went on for so long, and Gigi up until that point had been like a really strong willed single mom, like woman, and then this Stacy comes in and just like walks all over her. And so I got a little like, you know, sometimes with your alter ego that you actually get like protective of them. Like, it's like, you know, you go in and out of these two personalities every day, and it can be like, actually like it can affect you. I look back now, I'm like, I don't know why I cared. It's not real. But yeah, I just had wanted Gigi to like punch the crap out of Stacy much sooner. But yeah, that's the only time I can remember like not being like thrilled with the way a story is going. Had it just been like shortened, and like, I think that's what Ron Carlovati had told me. He was like, "I just got so much pressure from ABC to just keep it going as long as possible." So he was like, "Don't hate me."
So when One Life did end, do you remember like where you were in your life at that point in terms of like, did you want to stay? Was it obvious to you, you would move back to LA? Like how did that period of time go for you?
Yeah, it was obvious that I'd move back to LA. And I thought it was obvious that my ex would move with me. We moved back together, but like, it was a real hard adjustment for him. And, I don't know, things just, we started auditioning, and I had some like really good opportunities. When we moved back, or when I moved back, But I was so rusty with my auditioning. I was like really nervous and, you know, I don't know how many years, 13 years on soaps. I just, I don't know. I just was kind of, I just had worked. I had no training in auditioning. So I kind of like blew some really big spots there after I moved back. I don't know, just like had to kind of I had like an identity crisis. I mean, like I had just been on soaps for, it felt like my whole life. And, so everything kind of came crashing down and, yeah. So that was like, I'd say like the 6 to 8 months after I moved back to LA, it was just like, just kind of crazy, like personal. Yeah. But, it all worked out.
It all worked out for the best.
Yeah.
Well, in 2011, you appeared on the E! Network soapy reality show Dirty Soap alongside several other stars of the genre, including Kirsten Storms and Nadia Bjorlin, GH's Kelly Monaco, who plays Sam, and Galen Garing, Daze's Rafe. So we've had the Dirty Soap discussion on the podcast with several of your co-stars. We've heard some mixed reviews of the experience. So what was it like for you, you know, to be filmed, to have cameras following you around, and what, like, was there any coaching done? Like, what was your experience with Dirty Soap?
I just learned so much that it's all about the editing. Like they can take a situation. It happened this way. And then with the power of editing, we'll make it look like it happened a completely different way. I mean, there's count on every episode. I was like, really? That is not how that happened. Or that is not what they just edit. Like they'll take whatever you say in a different situation and they can dub it in wherever they want it to make it sound like you reacted that way to something else. And I mean, and the way that they like decided to portray me on the show was, it was just like this it was like almost a villainous type personality. But that's, I mean, nothing happened the way it really. Yeah. So I was kind of astonished at how like editing can just like be your worst nightmare, worst friend, very bad friend.
Has it made it impossible for you to enjoy reality television?
Yes. Cause I'm just like, you can't trust anything that's being portrayed. Like this could have happened a completely different way. Like she might've not even said that there. I've caught things before, or like now that I like am hyper aware of it, I'm like, look, her lips didn't even match up with what she just said right there. So yeah, I learned a lot. I don't want to say like, I don't regret any, you know, type of thing, but, yeah.
But you maybe wouldn't do the reunion special.
I don't think there's any point.
Well, and some happy personal news. In 2015, you tied the knot with your husband, Phil Galfond. So how did you two meet?
So I had played, or I'd been interested in poker for many years. And actually Dirty Soap is the reason I had a Twitter account made. They made it for me. I had kind of sworn off social media at that point. Deleted like my MySpace and my Facebook and those sorts of things. And then now the Dirty Soap people are telling me you have to have a Twitter account. And I was like, I'm not doing Twitter. I don't know what Twitter is. I don't want to be involved. And they're like, all right, well, we're going to do it for you. And I was like, fine. And, I don't know, a few episodes into Dirty Soap, I thought, I wonder what they're saying as me, like, cause they're pretending to be me on Twitter. And so I checked in and it was just the corniest stuff. And I was like, oh my God, these people think that I talk like this. This is ridiculous. And then I told the producers to give me the password to this account, cause I'm just going to take it from here. And then, so I logged in and I was like, well, if I'm going to be on Twitter, I want to at least follow some people that like I'm interested in. And I think my husband was like maybe the first person I followed, because I had seen him on High Stakes Poker, a television show. And he just like his personality was like very like dry and like understated. And like, he kind of drew me in. I think he was like the first person I followed, and I followed him for about a year. on Twitter and was, and always really like, I don't know, his tweets would like grab me more than anything else. I just was like, I had this pull towards him. And after a year, I replied to something he said. And I don't really think I'd never like replied to anybody before besides fans that I didn't know. Like I'd never tweeted at a celebrity or whatever. And he responded back and I was like, oh, cool. And that's really all I kind of thought about it. And then a couple more like instances. And then I made a joke and he didn't reply back to the joke for like a couple days. And I was like, oh my God, he thinks I'm stupid or like, yeah, I was like, oh, that was a really dumb joke, I guess. Oh man. And then I direct messaged him. I got like really in my head about it. I was like, sorry for saying like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, just, you know, that was, I don't even remember what it was. And he was like, oh, hey, hi. Yeah, no, I didn't even see it. But at that point I had slid into his DMs, but I, but not with any type of like, you know, I didn't have a motive for it besides I just was like embarrassed. And then we started talking on DM and then, that went on for like a few weeks and then he was going to be in LA. Well, he said he had plans to be in LA, but I learned like 2 years later that, he lied and made that up just so he could come meet me. So, yeah. And then the first week we hung out, it was like, we knew that that was it. And it's been 10 years.
Crazy. So your wedding took place in your home in Las Vegas and Melissa Archer, who we've talked about, was one of your bridesmaids. What else stands out to you as you look back on the big day?
Well, I wish I had de-poofed my hair a little bit, but, no, I mean, the thing I look back on, everything looked beautiful. I just wish that I had, like kind of relaxed a little bit more and just tried to be in the moment. And like, I was maybe like stressed about like all the logistics of it. And, I should have just like let it go and let it just come together the way it was supposed to. That's the advice I give to people I know now that are going to get married. I'm just like, just take a deep breath. Don't worry about things and just like focus, like being in the moment. But yeah, I mean, the flowers, everything looked gorgeous. So, I mean, that's what's most important is that everything looked good. But I wish I had been like a little more present. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that same year you appeared in one of Allison Sweeney's Hannah Swenson mystery series adaptations for Hallmark and got to work with both Ally and Cameron Matheson, who plays Drew on GH now. So tell us about that experience.
Yeah. I mean, that just worked out. Phil and I were back and forth from Vancouver quite a bit in the early years. He played poker online and he had to be somewhere other than the United States of America. And so Vancouver is where he chose. And I would see that Allie was back and forth to Vancouver a lot. So I messaged her like, we should get together, you know? And so we had dinner and a couple times and she overheard me and Phil talking about getting our residency. And she was like, what, you're going to get your residency? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, oh, well then you could work on one of my movies. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that that's how that worked. But, so she was like, just let me know. And, I mean, I still auditioned for it, but I think she was like a big part of why I got the part. Yeah. Once I got my residency, I auditioned and then, yeah, it was really fun. Then I don't know, after that, I got really comfortable in my new house in Vegas. And like, we kind of just, Vancouver was just kind of phased out. Otherwise I would have, you know, tried to keep working there. That was like, I didn't know the residency card was like my magic ticket, but I could have like done other projects probably, but I don't know. I just got really cozy at home in Vegas. So, and I was taking up poker more seriously also. So that was like another passion that was taking up a lot of time. And, you know, I started to like reevaluate, like, do I even want to keep acting? I like love poker so much and there's a lot of money to be made in poker. So that's another reason, but
Yeah. Well, in 2018, while you were pregnant, you got the call to return 2 days as Mimi for a short stint. This was your first appearance in Salem since 2007. So first off, what did it mean to you to get that call? And what did it mean to you that over 10 years later, there was, you know, still so much interest and affection for your character that they wanted Mimi and you back?
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked. I think, you know, it has a lot of ducks have to be in a row. I think, you know, Ron knew me from One Life. So I think that probably helped. I don't know if maybe there was a different head writer, if I would have ever popped up on the radar. But yeah, I was very surprised and excited. And unfortunately, it happened during the like 3 sickest weeks of my life. So nauseated and trying to hide that. So I didn't get to enjoy it as much as I would have normally. But I mean, for the condition I was in, gray faced and throwing up in my dressing room, I enjoyed myself for the condition I was in. But I really wish, I mean, it had just been like a month before. That would have been fine. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be cool to do another stint again. I'm not going to be pregnant again. So, this time I could really, really take it in.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it like for you to even just be back on the set after all that time?
So weird. I mean, it's just like, I think it's probably like going back to like a childhood home, you know, that you hadn't been to in a million years. And it's like, this is where I used to do this. And oh, this is where I'd get my coffee. This is where I would take naps. This is where I would eat my lunch. This is, you know, and everything looked the same. And it was, yeah, it was definitely weird. So many familiar faces, everyone just a little bit older looking. And it was surreal. Yeah.
Well, the cause of all that nausea arrived in December of that year. You became a mom to your absolutely adorable son, Spencer. So having a sister, but no brother, and nieces, but no nephews, were you at all nervous about having a boy?
Yeah, I mean, I just was going to roll with it, but I definitely wanted a girl because I have my nieces and I only like, I don't know, I had not been around any boy babies. But he's just... best. He's so cute. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I get, you know, my nieces are, I'm so close with them and they live out here now and, they've got their own room in my house. And it feels like I want to pretend to have a daughter, I definitely can do that with them. Like, I buy girly clothes, I paint their room pink. And, yeah, I mean, they're going to grow up with my son, like as close as they're going to be like sisters to him anyway. So, yeah.
Well, you mentioned poker. In recent years, your own profile has risen on the circuit. So tell us about this shift in your professional life.
Yeah. I mean, I just love the game. I started playing like a lot when I moved to New York. I would go to Atlantic City quite a bit on the weekends and I just fell in love with the game and I'd watch it on TV. I'd read books. And then when I met Phil, he just taught me so much. And I don't know, like, it was just sort of this natural path and I became, I would say, close to obsessed with it. And people will ask me, do you like acting or poker more? And it's pretty even, but I would say poker probably even has like the edge. Like it might be like a 60-40 or maybe a 70-30 thing. I just love the game. It's so exciting. It's always something new. It's never the same situation. And that competitive part of me gets to really come out. And yeah, so I would go to, like, before I was pregnant, I would go to the casinos and play live, like most nights. I was there most nights and I started off playing like low stakes, not, you know, wagering very much money, but then I started making a lot of money and realizing, okay, I guess I'm getting good. Maybe I can move up in the stakes. So then I would move up and then I'd move up. And then, I found myself like in some very, very big games over the years. but once I, now that I'm a mom, I don't play as much as I used to, but I mean, still dabble and make some money during the year, but it's been a wild ride for sure. Like I mean, there are some nights where I just like, you wouldn't even believe, like, I mean, I'm like millions of dollars are on the poker table. It's just crazy. Like where, like to think about like how I grew up and then my being on a soap opera. And then now I'm like this high stakes poker player. I mean, I was playing games with celebrities, billionaires, just like, yeah, I've seen some wild stuff. I've like, you know, I've made crazy amounts of money in one night. And it's just like it's like one of those movies you see in the movies. I don't know. It's just,
I want to see this movie. This movie, Farah.
Does Phil still have his website? Shall we plug it?
Yeah. He owns a poker school. It's subscription based. It's called runitonce.com. He has about at any given time, like 40 professional poker players, that are all very successful, teaching, like, and they have their own way of teaching, but like videos, and you can just watch, it's just this giant library of, poker school. And, a lot of it is pretty advanced, but you can, there are some beginner courses in there too. So run it once. Yeah. And, that's it.
So clearly you mentioned playing with celebrities. So you've recognized some people at the table before. Have you ever been recognized at the table before?
Yes. Well, to be honest, I'm mostly recognized for being Phil's wife. That's just the world I'm in. Yeah. But a lot of people will say, and I know you're Phil's wife, but I also know you used to be on blah, blah, blah. And my mom, or like, you know, then maybe I'll take a photo for their mom or their wife or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely more known as a poker player now. Like the soap opera life is, it's back there now.
What if a soap came calling? Maybe not just days. You're in Vegas. You can get to LA easily. Like, would you go back?
Well, the problem is I wouldn't be able to do anything long-term. Like I just, not with my life and Spencer and school and being out here, but I could definitely make like a few months worthwhile, you know, but I hate being like, I'd love to do it, but, can you kill me off in 3 months? You know? Yeah.
Well, I feel like short visits are sort of the new, new black.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm up for a short visit. I don't know if anyone out there is. So, but if they are, sure. Short visits I can do.
Before we let you go, what would you like to say to, the fans who know you more for your soap work than your poker work and have been following you since 1999 and of course have such fond memories of the characters that you've played?
Yeah. I mean, I posted a throwback recently on my Instagram and I got so much response from it. I was really, my heart was warmed. You know, I forget that, like, that was like a big time in Soapland. So many people watched in the 90s and early 2000s and, you know, people scheduled their classes around it. And I forget that, like, I was really a part of that. And, so, I mean, listen, if I feel like it was just a special time for me as it was for them. And, I don't think I did anything out of the ordinary. It's just like, I was in the right place at the right time. And I don't know. It's just, I think it's cool too. And like when they tell me, I used to love watching you. It's like, I can really understand what that was like because I watched the show too before I started. I just feel so grateful to have been a part of it during like that time. Like it was just such a cool era. So, super cool part of my life. And, I appreciate anyone who's ever said anything nice to me like on the internet and whatever. And, I actually have in this closet over here, I have a couple bins full of fan letters. I never threw any of them out. So, all of that stuff's really, you know, special to me. So,
well, I feel fortunate that I got to meet you through Days, and I appreciate the time you gave us today, Farrah. It was so great to catch up and looking forward.
Thank you for having me. I'm always in shock when someone wants to talk to me about anything.
We've been talking about having you on forever. So surprise. Yeah. Anyway, hope to talk to you soon, and have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Farrah Pfaff for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.